Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very accomplished professional, well-respected individual from London, UK, Mr. Ram Gidumal, CBE. Ram, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh, and lovely to join you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you. Ram is an author. And all of you know, I'm always very partial to authors. He's an author of a book titled My Silk Road, The Adventures and Struggles of a British Asian Refugee. Ram has been included in the High Flyers 50, which is the 50 most eminent people of Indian origin living and working outside India. And in 1998, he was awarded the CBE. So Ram, what an amazing career and journey you've had. Can you share some memorable experiences from your childhood in Kenya, and how did they shape your outlook in life?
Sure. I mean, there's so much to share, which I put in my memoirs, but the one that stands out for me is as a 12-year-old, I remember sharing my pocket money, tuck money, for which you spend at break time for goods, goodies. And there were two other friends, and we would meet together, and I would share my tuck money. Now, I came from a very wealthy family, so I had a lot. The other two didn't have as much, but I decided we're going to share it equally.
Okay.
So we shared it equally, and you know, I forgot about it. I did that and never thought twice about it until 50 years later, one of the people that I had shared this with, I met, and he is the founder and chair of Syntel Inc., a NASDAQ-quoted company. And to my delight and surprise, after 50 years, he'd never forgotten our friendship, and he invited me to join his board.
Wow.
So a little act from 50 years ago suddenly has repaid itself in a membership of a NASDAQ-quoted company with a subsidiary in the UK. And then the other memory, of course, is family. To me, I lost my biological father when I was 6 weeks old. But the extended family is such a powerful concept. Honestly, from my time in Kenya, I've never forgotten the love, the care of the family. I didn't even know I'd lost my biological father. Such was the love in the family. So to me, that continues right through the present and something I inculcate in my own children and grandchildren, the importance of family.
How wonderful. How wonderful. Thank you for sharing this. My next question is, how did the experience of being deported a second time impact your family and your personal ambitions? And tell me about the first time as well.
Well, the first time, obviously, everybody was people, Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, killing each other. And we were very fortunate, although we lived in a palace, Moti Mahal, and the family had made a fortune in silk trading. We are traders, we are Sindhis.
Yeah.
And we fled. The ship took to Kenya, where uncle, a granduncle, had a business, and South Africa. And it was a shock, but you struggled once. But when it happened the second time, that was again a shock, but this time a sense of deja vu. The family was, I can't say prepared, you know, never expect it.
Yep.
But my father, I call him father, but you know, my uncle, he had been there before. It was depressing and disappointing, but again, we lost everything again. And humiliation, you know, from selling silk and major goods to now landing in London, 15 of us, four bedrooms above this corner shop, because we had to trade. We could not take government help. He said, no, we must earn our own keep. 15 of us in four bedrooms began life again. But being traders, within 2 years, we had six shops.
Amazing.
And it was extraordinary that the family got together, worked hard, used all our relationships, our connections. When the silk trade was going on, deep relationships were formed with Hong Kong financiers. They heard of our plight. They knew we had one shop. We said, we need money, working capital for a second shop. The banks are not lending money. They gave us a working capital loan. We paid back within 2 years, six shops. And then, of course, that was in 67. So 47, 67. In 87, I had the privilege of the position of at the age of 37 to say, I can retire because the business has been not only the corner shop, but an uncle's business took me to be the group chief, UK group chief executive of the Inlax Group. The Inlax Group is a family business.
Yeah.
And they gave the foundations in India. There's an Index Foundation. And that was just extraordinary. You know, 47, 67, and 87 at the age of 37 to have that privilege of saying, now, what do I do with my life? And there's a story there which I can share with you.
Amazing, amazing. And, you know, you did mention when you moved from Kenya, you know, 14 people in four bedrooms. What were some of these challenges that you faced? You know, you said working capital a little bit, but and how did you overcome them as a family?
Well, for the first one was, of course, I mean, it's very sad to say racism, because we would arrive, I was 17, politicians were making horrible speeches against people like us. Mm-hmm. You walk on the street, you're the subject of attack. They have license, they can just attack you. Mm-hmm. So how did we handle it? Three, four of us went together in groups, number one. Number two, there was a local football club, Queen's Park Rangers. They wore a blue and white scarf, blue and white hat, blue and white gloves. We bought those, decided to wear those. It served as a kind of protection, and it worked. So, and the grounds were just behind our shop. And then, of course, I mentioned working capital, but we saw opportunities. You know, there were financial limits, but that's never put us down. We suddenly saw, for example, customers who looked white. They said, their accent was different. We said, so your accent is different. Where do you come from? They said, Ireland. Ireland. I said, oh, where is Ireland? They said, oh, it's a different country, but part of Britain. So what do you miss from where you come from? Newspapers, chocolates, cigarettes. We made a list, brought them across. They paid a premium. Before we knew it, almost every Irishman within miles was coming to our shop. Amazing. Then we noticed in the evening when all the shops were shut, we went out for a walk. 9 o'clock, there's crowds coming from a bingo hall. Let's open the shop for half an hour. Packed. So, you know, things like that, spotting opportunities, seizing opportunities, not being constrained by, oh, they've always done it this way. Be creative. You know, the same set of information, a different set of eyes. And there we were suddenly, I can say it, minting it to six shops.
Incredible. What an amazing story. Thank you for sharing this. And then, you know, at 37, you talked about the INLAX Foundation. Ram, what was the pivotal moment or realization that led you to redirect your career and your efforts towards social entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent question, Ashutosh, because there I was, 37, we now bought these seafood factories in Scotland. We now wanted to become sort of good quality of earnings. We were all in Saudi Arabia and Dubai and Nigeria. And this, the bankers were saying, you need European assets. So we bought these seafood factories. And they were shutting them for 3 months in the year. And I said, why? No fish. I said, nonsense. My granny said there's fish in India. So I went on a 10-day trip to India. And I did buy prawns and fish. But on the 10th day, I visited the largest slum in Asia in 1987, the Harari, where Slumdog Millionaire was shot 20 years later. I was there in 87, and it broke my heart. The stories in the book, I won't go into detail, but I can tell you that it impacted me so much that on that first-class flight, Air France, back to the UK, I broke down. I said, what am I doing with my life? 37, you know, these people need help. I have more than I can spend on myself and my family. So literally over a procedure which I've described in the book, I resigned, but honorably, you know, took my time to leave, didn't dump the company. And, you know, that was the turning point where I said, what can I do? I set up a charity. 50,000 teenagers were mobilized over a 7-year period to raise nearly $10 million through creative businesses 4 weeks before Christmas. High spend, high street, high guilt. They ran Eat Less, Pay More restaurants. They ran radio stations, Tune In, Pay Out. They ran newspapers, The Cracker, you know, The Cracker Sutton, The Cracker London, whatever. And it was extraordinary. And then from there, when I got the taste of that working, I said, how can I run businesses that will not necessarily just pay me back, but will contribute cash and generate income for society? So one such business was Tradecraft, a pioneer in fair trade businesses, helping farmers to get a fair wage for a fair day's work, whether in India or South America or Africa. Global, really went well. Other one, Cotton Connect, organic cotton, which brings me to India now regularly, because we train farmers in Gujarat, in Maharashtra, to use the right fertilizer and the right insecticide. Otherwise, they're shortening their lives, the lives of their family, and destroying the land. So But it's a social enterprise. So whatever is generated, the company has now grown to over £10 million from modest startups. And the money goes back into the business to train more farmers and to widen the impact. So we're now in Bangladesh, we're in Pakistan, we're setting up in Turkey, signed a contract with Egypt, making an impact for those who really need it, because it is such an important thing. But not making money for ourselves now, putting it back into the communities.
Incredible, incredible. And my next question to you is that, you know, built businesses, succeeded beyond imagination, created a lot of wealth, gave it all up, became a social entrepreneur. How would you describe your own leadership style and how has it evolved?
Well, my leadership style is based so much on what I've learned from my family. And one other very sort of strategic thing that happened is when I was at university, I met someone called Jesus in a pub. And when I was introduced to him, I wondered who he was. I always thought he was a Westerner from the city of London, pinstripes with blown a hat, you know, all blue eyes, blonde, and discover actually, you know, he was in the Bible, Middle Eastern. So I said, let me explore this man. So without saying I've become a Christian or anything like that, I said, I love the simplicity of his teaching. Let me see what he says and how he works. And he has a teaching style, a management style, which was very consensual, always bringing people together, reconciling. And I drew from that to make my own management style when I was with INLAX and even before that, when I worked with Lloyds Bank International for a couple of years in the city.
Right.
Bringing people together, consensual, diplomatic. Now, I know this sounds cheeky, but always trying to let other people have my way.
Okay.
But how do you do it?
Yes.
You
know, yes.
Diplomacy, letting other people have your way. And people will say, oh, yes, I did that. I said, good. I'm glad you thought of that. So always empowering people and then trust and relationship, making sure that that trust is absolutely there, that integrity is never, never, never compromised. And that clearly has helped in terms of leadership, in terms of building businesses, because once you get that, people stay with you, people are then prepared. So where we've had businesses running in difficulty and had to take cuts, and that has happened in an IT business, which was a startup, for example, my friend, they were prepared to take cuts too, and they were prepared to sacrifice, and everyone together pulled in. So that consensual sharing, really, really important for me in terms of leading.
Fantastic. Thank you. And what strategies do you use to cope with adversity and manage resilience?
Well, one of the first things I must tell you is I'm a great believer in prayer, the power of prayer. I do turn to prayer when the going gets tough, when there's nowhere else to turn. And believe you me, there have been many times that has happened. I said, all right, calm down, stop, just pray. So that's one of the most important things I've learned in life. Since I met with Jesus in that pub, you know, I thought, yes, what did he do? You know, he went to a quiet place, reflected, reflection. And then it's sharing with friends. I set up a little accountability group, two people who I trust impeccably. And this was the model, by the way, used by a guy called Alonzo McDonald, who was President Carter's chief of staff. We were in a joint group together, which he led. And he shared what he did in the White House. I said, you know, if a man like that is doing it, who are two people I trust, who I can download with, and they can upload too with me? And then trusted advisors, always looking for people I can trust now. How can they advise me? A range of skills available at my fingertips, sort of like a personal council of reference, a personal council of advisors. So it's that kind of thing, always sharing, always trying to see where else is there wisdom which I can draw from, because we don't have it all.
Well said. My next question is, how has your Indian heritage influenced your approach to business and philanthropy?
Well, my Indian heritage, I've shared already, it's the strength of family. But for me, I have seen the power of that within my own family, that Indian heritage goes generations. And even today, I meet people. I mean, there was a random meeting in a restaurant, and somebody discovered I was a nephew of somebody in Kenya who had done a lot of good. You know, he built almost every temple in East Africa, my grandfather's brother, who looked after us.
Wow.
When he saw the common surname, I'm not kidding, Ashutosh, he came to my table. We were at a restaurant and he heard my name being called for dinner being served. Mm. He touched my feet. Okay. I said, hey, please. He says, no, what's your grandfather's? You know, he thought it was a grandfather, but of course, I will never forget. And I thought, wow. And when I visited East Africa as well on one visit, you know, it was the night when everybody fasts, Navratri and all those, that period. And a dinner was organized where I was a speaker. The locals did not know that that was the case. Mm. So they organized this 200 people feast. Nobody was going to come. But when people heard who the speaker was and saw the surname, the whole crowd turned up. They didn't eat. They said, we're fasting, but we want to shake your hands and respect what has happened. So, you know, the Indian heritage, for me, the visible demonstration of it and the experience of it is one that I draw from and that I cherish. And for me, that has been a very powerful bit of heritage in the global relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, global, Hong Kong, you draw from Hong Kong and you get funds on trust. And the local bank that can see you every day doesn't give you a penny. Mm. That is powerful.
That is so true.
Yeah.
My next question is that, you know, you've been recognized so many times. How did it feel to be honored by Her Late Majesty, the Queen Elizabeth II? And what does the award represent to you?
Well, I must tell you, when that letter came in the mail and I opened it, I could not believe it. It said CBE, and I said to my wife, oh, I would have liked an OBE, but I didn't understand what all this was. To be honest, I really didn't understand it. So we got the Webster's Dictionary at our table and we looked at it. They said, oh, C is commander, O is officer. It's better than officer. I said, wow. I was so excited. I folded the letter, put it in the envelope. I was going to post it. My wife said, you haven't signed it. You haven't ticked the box. You accept it. It was such an exciting moment for me. And of course, I then did that. And I must say, I was very humbled by it. My ego needs a very low, Ashutosh. You know, I mean, honestly, so I got it. Okay, it was exciting, but you do what you do, whether you get this or not. You know, you continue to serve. And but so many doors have opened. Even the policeman at Buckingham Palace, when I was leaving and taking photographs, he said, sir, you will now see with that title, newspaper editors will take your letter seriously. The public office, I said, really? And it worked, you know. I would write to newspapers, the Times or the Guardian. And even the Guardian, you know, every year they publish my birthday. Now, it's all very nice. My kids love it, but my ego needs a low. Whether that happens or not, you just do what you do and use the advantage of what it confers to continue to do more good. Doors open, boards inviting me to serve on as non-executive or even chairman. And because the credibility is now there, and an independent assessment has been made by a very influential panel who recognize you for what you've done. And for me, that has been very heartening and very humbling.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I can see or sense you are a true karma yogi, you know, as defined in the Gita as well. Keep doing your work, and that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah.
My next question for you, Ram, is that once you started your philanthropic work, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the most important thing for me was who to trust. So many people come forward. Your letterbox is full. Who is really in need? Who do you trust? So that first thing was, and this is where for me, relational networking from my Indian heritage has been so important. It's getting to know the people, getting to find out what is going on. And then the other one, which somebody used as an expression, was wearing out shoe leather. So there was a project which had, you know, one of the things I was doing is the Christmas cracker, which I talked about, 50,000 teenagers raising nearly $10 million was one project. But that is all going overseas to other countries. I said, what is going on in Britain? So I could see the statistics. East London was a deprived community. So what did I do? I wore out shoe leather, visited it, saw it for myself, saw the need and said, now what can I do? And then we set up a thing called the social impact bond. Now, when we set it up, people laughed. They said, Ram, you've never done this before. I said, look, I'm going to raise for London. And by the way, this is when I ran for mayor of London. This is where the whole thing becomes so relevant about the challenges of philanthropy. I said, I will raise £500 million for the poorest communities. And all the candidates laughed. And but, you know, that was in year 2000. When I retired 20 years later in 2020, we have raised nearly £2 billion of social impact bonds, something that had never been done before, a new product. It started with zero coupon, went on now to pay commercial rates with some bonds, even quoted on the London Stock Exchange. So that's trust, networking, checking out all the time, becoming parts of philanthropic networks where you're in a peer group and begin to share and learn from one another. So that has been part of facing those challenges.
How wonderful. I have time for two more questions for you.
Sure.
I want to now talk a little bit about your book, My Silk Road, The Adventures and Struggles of a British Asian Refugee. What inspired you, Ram, to write your autobiographical memoir? And what message do you hope readers will take away from it?
Well, the what inspired me was lockdown happened. We couldn't celebrate. So when the day approached of my 70th birthday, my wife brought a little glass of champagne, had one in her hand, saying, okay, nobody can meet with us. We'd planned big parties and huge gatherings. Let's just sit. And she put the laptop on and Zoom. Suddenly, the whole family was on Zoom, 15 of us.
Okay.
I thought, wow. And then they prepared a 1.5-hour video of my life.
Mm.
They had contacted relatives globally, Sindhi communities across the globe after partition, friends, members of boards I'd served on. And it was extraordinary. I was exhausted at the end of the 90 minutes. Whoa, what a treat. And then, of course, the questions from my grandchildren. Papa, who are all these people? Who are all these relatives you never met? I said, I'll start writing about each of them. And you know, as I started writing, word spread out that Ram is writing. A publisher called me, said, you're not going to anybody else. I want to publish it. I said, what confidence you have in publishing? Who will want to read this? He said, no, I'm going to do it. I said, it's me. And he did it. And so it took me 18 months. He wanted it to coincide with India's 75 years independence celebrations.
Okay.
And it was launched at the Habitat Center in Delhi. And it so happened when I happened to be in Delhi, staying in Gurgaon because of the business being there, a lady called Ramola Bachchan. I sent her a random message, not knowing where she was because I knew her from years back. I said, are you free? She said, yes, I'll attend. When my team found out she's free and attending, they said, oh, she should launch the book. So Ramola Bachchan, a name like Bachchan, came along. And the call was packed and the book was launched in Delhi in August 22. And it's now really done very well. 1,000 hardbacks sold there, another 1,000 in the UK, paperback edition out. But for me, what's exciting is that those who are reading it, primarily my grandchildren and the new generation, really learn what I've put in the book. So, you know, the three lessons, you know, what are the lessons I've put into my book? Have an attitude that serves, especially the marginalized and disadvantaged. There are so many of them. And then the importance of humility. And then I stress this integrity, integrity, integrity. Never, never compromise on that. And the third is never give up. You know, never let what you cannot do stop you from doing what you can do, because there is always something you can do. And so to me, those lessons I've really stressed and more in the book. But as you asked for three, those are three headlines I can share with you very quickly.
Amazing. And on that note, Ram, and your three wonderful lessons, how important humility is in our lives, how important integrity is. Third one you said was never give up. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your absolutely incredible journey. You achieved so much. And yet, as you said very rightly, your needs are small. Your ego is very manageable. But what an amazing journey you've had. And I'm sure my viewers and listeners will love listening to your conversation with me. I'm sure a lot of them will reach out to try and get hold of your book, My Silk Road. I'm going to get a copy for myself. And next time I meet you, I'm going to get you to autograph it for me. Thank you again for speaking to me and good luck.
I'd be delighted to do that, Ashutosh. I look forward to connecting with you. And yes, as I said, I will try and meet you in Delhi when I'm next there. And we've made a date there. Thank you, Ashutosh. Done.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.